shut up. The footy's on Triple M.
This is a Triple M footy news update.
This is massive, this story.
A little exclusive.
With Tom Brown.
Monday, the 13th of September, and the grand final combatants are set in stone, which means it's time for another edition of Triple M Footy's news update with Tom Brown. My name's Rudy, and I've got Tom here on the phone from WA. And Tommy, Adam Goods has spoken on the weekend.
You can't wait to discuss the finals, Rudy. I'm over here in WA, and I'll give you an insight into what happened over here in the weekend, over the weekend, and what happened with Geelong. Obviously, the Bulldogs set up, Melbourne set up. I'm about to get to Melbourne training as we speak during our podcast. But I'll start with Adam Goods this morning. He's given a really important interview with Andrew Pridham, who's the Swans chairman, on Andrew's podcast. It's the third episode of that podcast series. I've been in discussions in recent weeks with Andrew about this hotly anticipated interview and podcast. And look, I'd encourage our listeners to listen to Adam for themselves. It's compelling listening. Adam addresses a range of issues, obviously on leadership, his life, the way he was recruited into the Swans, all sorts of interesting issues. But obviously the big one is the very confronting issue of booing and how that affected the end of his career. And this is a short clip of some, frankly, startling revelations by Adam Goods on the issues that confronted him towards the end of his career in regards to the booing.
I believe everything happens for a reason, and I'm glad, you know, that 13-year-old girl called me an ape that night, because it's ended me up to where we are today. And I feel like we're in a place today that, you know, 5 years ago we probably mightn't have been as a nation. After 18 years of playing, you know, I just got to a point where I didn't have anything more to prove, because it just took a complete weight off my shoulders. And that weight was, you know, having to go to work for 2 hours and put up with that shit that was happening, that I couldn't pinpoint who it was. I couldn't see their faces, but it was just happening around me at my work environment. So there are always going to be people who boo us. They're going to try and knock us down. You just got to keep rising above it. And if hopefully, in reflecting on what happened to me in their own world, in their own circumstances, that they can draw on some of that strength and power to make them get through those tough times in their life, then that's me having to make that sacrifice for the future. I knew it was just something that happened when I went to work. Boys are like, Goodsy, this is bullshit. What can we do? Well, the best thing that you can do is we go out there and win. Because when we go out there win, I tell you right now, I walk off with a puffed up chest and my head held high. And that is the biggest FU to the crowd. And that's done. There's closure on that for me. We went across to Perth and we lost. And that's where it all just hit me that this is going to be my last year of football. And this is going to be my sending out. I'm going to be booed all the way to the end.
Rudy Goods acknowledging that, look, football's a workplace, and he wanted his job to end because he wasn't enjoying his job because he was getting booed. And it's just incredible to hear there that his response to teammates who wanted to try and help him was, well, let's win, because it allows me to puff out my chest and feel good about myself, because there was a sense of resignation about the fact he was getting booed, and there was a sense of resignation on the part of Goods that was going to be the legacy or the end of his career that he confronted. Particularly, there was an incident, obviously significant incident, over here in Perth. So an incredible interview from Adam Goods, and Andrew Pridham on his Twitter has linked that podcast.
Yeah, important listening there, Tommy. Let's get to the preliminary finals. It was not really a cracking weekend of footy, was it? Very, very comprehensive from both the D's on Friday night and the Dogs on Saturday night.
Look, an incredible situation, Rudy. We expected close preliminary finals. We didn't get them. But what it does really is set up an enthralling all-Victorian grand final. The Bulldogs going for their second premiership in 6 years. And, Melbourne going for their first in 57 years, and, you know, the first grand final since 2000. And there's just so much history now attached with this game and the situation. And it was just an incredibly one-sided weekend of finals. Port capitulated, and it will create discussion around Ken Hinckley. And the Bulldogs, were just absolutely incredible, kicking 5 goals inside 10 minutes. You know, from a contested stat perspective, I think champion data had never recorded a more one-sided quarter in the history of football in terms of contested positions. So lots to discuss, you know, regarding Port, which we'll get to. But just an incredible performance by the Bulldogs, in particular Bailey Smith. And on Friday night, you know, Melbourne were just dominant. I spoke to a Geelong source Saturday who thought that Melbourne's midfield was one of the most dominant, they've seen in a final, even comparing it, say, for example, to the 2007 young Geelong side. So it was just an incredible weekend of football, Rudy.
Yeah, it was pretty. It was pretty full on. Both games more or less over at quarter time. You're over there in Perth. Where are both of the teams staying? In particular, I'm interested in the Dogs. What's their quarantine situation? Do they get any credit in the bank for the time they've spent interstate?
They don't get any credit for in the bank in the sense that the Bulldogs are in quarantine until 12:30 p.m. on Sunday. They can train, and they're staying in a place called the Trade Winds Hotel, which is a boutique hotel in Fremantle. The reason they're staying there is in part because it was recommended by Geelong. Geelong were really keen on it. Geelong checked out of the same hotel yesterday. And also it's got a gym. It's got a courtyard facility, a games-type facility in terms of ping pong and that sort of stuff, and a pool, all contained in the same hotel. So whilst they're locked down, the Bulldogs are obviously pretty happy there this week. Does it constrain them in terms of their preparation? I guess it does. They can't get out and walk and do things like that, but they can train, and they've got arrangements to train over here, and they are in good accommodation, so there's not much they can do about it. And Bevo really has used that, I guess, as a bit of an us-against-them mentality throughout the final series. You know, the Bulldogs have travelled from Melbourne to Launceston to Brisbane to Perth, back to Adelaide, and now back to Perth. If they win the grand final, you know, it'll be an absolute feat from a logistical and energy and travel perspective, a bit like, I guess, what West Coast have done at various times, you know, in their history, 92, 94, and then obviously in the 2000s, twice. So look, it would be comparable to that or even greater. But the Bulldogs have got an okay setup. Melbourne are staying up in Joondalup, and I keep getting criticised online for my pronunciation of Joondalup, Rudy, so hopefully I'm correct. This has a few social media people in Western Australia that seem quite keen on just singling me out for that. But and that's where we are this morning. And they're now free to do essentially whatever they want. The players can go to the beach, they can go to cafes, they can go and have a beer at the pub this week if they want to. Now, I don't know what the best preparation for the grand final is, but they're essentially free to do what they want.
I'm tipping very few beers between now and the grand final for either side, Tommy. Stephen May's hamstring is going to be a big talking point over the next couple of weeks. Have you got an update there?
Big talking point, Rudy. We're here at Melbourne training this morning where May is training. It's not strapped, his hamstring. He's on his obviously modified program. He's just kicking the ball as we speak at the moment away from the main group. So clearly he's got to manage what they describe as hamstring tightness. But Melbourne tell me that he hasn't even had it scanned. And they think that he was optimistic after the game. I think it's back-related. And they don't seem too concerned. So we'll obviously keep a very close eye on that in the next 2 weeks. But the great news for Melbourne fans this morning is that May isn't back at the hotel or anything like that. He's out there training, albeit on a modified program. And he'll have to manage that for the next 2 weeks. But Melbourne seem confident, at least they're saying they're confident, that May will play. And the buys obviously come at a very good time for Stephen May. Alex Neil Bullen just spoke. He's got some family over in here in Perth. They've come in from Adelaide. He's very excited about the whole event. It seems like Melbourne's challenge, as is the Bulldogs' challenge with his bye now, is not to play the grand final in their head and rock up exhausted on Saturday week. And Melbourne are, in fact, going to have a pretty serious hit out themselves, an intra-club hit out on Saturday afternoon to bridge that gap. And that's what they've revealed this morning. They're going to have an intra-club hit out on Saturday afternoon just to prepare for the game. Now, obviously, that runs the risk of injury, but they're going to go hard in sun drills, match style, just to try and keep battle hardened for the grand final on Saturday week, Rudy.
All right. Fingers crossed for D's fans that no one gets hurt.
Absolutely. But it's not a bad idea, actually. It'd be interesting to see if the Bulldogs do the same thing.
Yes, and it's good that we'll see pretty much full-strength 22s out there for the most part.
And Rudy, I mentioned that Luke Beveridge has got a bit of an us-against-them mentality. There's been an interesting dialogue over the weekend about Beveridge defending Adam Treloar. And my view on that is that's the coach's job. Like, Beveridge's job is to get the best out of Adam Treloar and try and get him to have 25 possessions in the grand final. And he's clearly trying to back his player, and that's sort of coaching 101. As for, you know, his criticism of the media, I'm not commenting on what Kane Corn said or anything like that. But you could see from the vision last week that Footy Classified did show that Treloar's body language is poor against Brisbane, whether you like it or not. So I know that Kane Corns came out and defended his comments yesterday. That's for Bevo and Kane Corns to work out. But I think it's just one of those cases where the media was doing its job and Bevo is doing his job. And I think it's a fair discussion.
All's fair in love and footy there, Tommy. So you were down in the D's room on Friday night. Was it pretty jubilant?
Oh, it was business-like. They were absolutely wrapped. But it was an insight into, you know, the Demon situation. It's an incredible story. I mean, Gary Pert was down there. This time last year, Pert was in Noosa post-season, which is where the D's have basically been based, doing a quiet football review, not like Carlton's, but but he was reviewing the departments. He made changes. Josh Marnie obviously moved on to Essendon with great success, I might add, this year, I believe, and now has been touted for the AFL General Manager of Football role. But he put in Alan Richardson, and that now looks like a bit of a masterstroke. But, you know, they were doing a football review, so they were absolutely right. Gary Lyon was down there, and you could see the jubilation, you know, and just quiet jubilation on Lyon's face. You know, he's been through a lot with his club. He was a champion of the club. He watched his best mate and beloved mate, Jim Steins, take over the club, try and fix the club, then tragically pass away. You know, Dean Bailey passed on after a tumultuous exit and the tanking controversy. And there's good people at Melbourne that have seen a lot of this stuff happen. Neil Danaher, you know, his situation, he's just like a godfather of football, one of the most respected figures in the game, who's, you know, got a tragic disease. So Melbourne, I could feel that energy in the rooms because it meant so much, I think, to a lot of people like Gary Pirtle, like Gary Lyon, and indeed Demon supporters. So you could certainly reflect that. But as for the players, I mean, they were pretty, they're pretty measured, you know, and they've developed. And I heard an anecdotal story over the weekend that Simon Goodwin, and you never know if these stories are true, Rudy, but apparently Simon Goodwin told people down on the coast over the summer break, don't worry about the review. I know there's pressure on me, but if we get a fit list with our development, I'm confident that we can win the flag. And I think there was a sense of optimism from Goody, who was under pressure at the start of the year. And that's just what makes the Melbourne story so great this week. The other story is for both sides, they're recruiting. Like, the Bulldogs have recruited brilliantly. Like, how do they get Smith? How do they get Waitman? How did they reinvent themselves after 2016 or certainly reset themselves? They've done it quietly, you know, under the radar, under the guidance of Sam Power, their recruiter, and also Luke Beveridge, and it's been a brilliant job. And Melbourne's no different. You know, they backed Petrarca, they picked Oliver, they went and got May, they went and got Lever, you know, they went and got these guys, and they've just done a brilliant job. So it just sets up such an exciting grand final.
Really, it's the grand final I think footy deserves this year, Tommy. I think it's fair to say. Let's speak about some of the vanquished teams from the prelims. Chris Scott, is his future's on the agenda a little bit. Can you clarify what's going on there?
Geelong left this issue open before the finals and before Friday night. So there's no criticism of anyone in this. Brian Cook was going to extend Chris Scott's deal at one point, and they shelved that, and then they were saying it was Steve Hocking was in charge, the incoming CEO, of doing that deal. I've spoken to Geelong sources over the weekend. Geelong have told Chris Scott that they'll extend his contract beyond next year. I think the board's supportive of Geelong extending Chris Scott's contract beyond the end of next year. I don't think Geelong think that he's spoken to Carlton. I'll explain why shortly. Part of it's because I don't think Chris Scott's interested in speaking to Carlton. And it's really up to Chris Scott now what he does in terms of the extension. I think, you know, they'll extend him beyond next year by the end of this year, and that will get done. But there's certainly a willingness on the part of Geelong to do that. It will depend on Chris, and it will depend on Steve Hocking, who starts in 3 weeks, but it's not necessarily an issue as far as I can tell. And Carlton, I believe, are chasing Brad Scott pretty hard, so there's no way Chris Scott's going to get involved at this point in the Carlton process. Not that he necessarily would anyway, but particularly given their interest in Brad. Geelong, behind the scenes, through sources, I think, moved to clarify that issue over the weekend. I spoke to senior sources there, and Geelong didn't want to make it an issue during the finals. They just didn't address it during the finals. That's the reason why there was a bit of a question mark, even up to Chris's press conference on Friday night.
Now, speaking of the Cats, Tommy, an illness swept through their camp on Friday night before the prelim. Can you run us through some details of that?
Yeah, I learned about this on Saturday morning. I had it on the news on Saturday night on 7 News. The Cats didn't want to make it an excuse. They were absolutely loathe to do that. They didn't want to make it an excuse. And Patrick Dangerfield echoed those sentiments yesterday. As I mentioned, the Cats were just completely compelled by Melbourne's midfield. There's no issues there. But on Thursday, up to 8 players, I'm told, were struck down by a virus. They were COVID-type symptoms, chills, sweats, nausea, vomiting, headaches, those types of things. They included some big names like Tom Hawkins. Now, there's two issues there. A, the fitness of the team. The players, I think, sort of just made it for the game, really. But B, and didn't play very well, and were hampered. They'll never make an excuse out of it, but they were. And obviously, there was the COVID implications because the WA government's the strictest COVID state in Australia. So the Geelong had to notify the AFL, and also had to notify the WA government, who were very helpful. And they obviously went all through the tests and all the rest of it, and they were confident there were no COVID issues in the end. But there were a few, certainly a hairy 24 hours for the Cats in the lead up to the game. And Chris Scott did allude to that in his post-match press conference on Friday night.
It was a pretty significant repudiation of the game plan on Friday night, Tommy. They were pretty much picked apart. Do you foresee major changes for the Cats?
No, I think there'll be incremental changes. I think there's a view already they might look to play some younger guys next year. I know Patrick Dangerfield, when I asked him about that yesterday, said it's horses for courses. They'll always pick the best team on talent, and I'm sure they will. But I don't think there'll be huge change at Geelong. I think they know that they'll, you know, comprehensively beaten by Melbourne. You know, they're a very professional and smart bunch of people, Geelong, Simon Lloyd and Chris Scott. You know, they know the next 8 weeks will be important, and there might be a rabbit out of their hat they can pull from a recruiting or a trade perspective. I think Narkle and Clark are likely probably to leave, particularly Clark, and come west. But I don't think there'll be massive changes. And that's certainly the word I'm getting out over the weekend, not even necessarily the assistant coaches or anything like that. I think they're pretty much set, and they think they've got one. They certainly think they've got one more crack in them. But it will be interesting to see what they do just to reset, because it does look like they were beaten by a younger, faster side. And I know they downplay the age demographic issue. And as Danger said yesterday, look, that's just the way Geelong do things. They know it's a different strategy and there's no right or wrong in all this. But it doesn't take a mathematician to work out they've got 10 or 11 players contracted over the age of 29. And that is older. So it's just the direction they've elected to go in. And they were beaten by a much more skilled and probably better age demographic team in Melbourne on Friday night with, you know, their key players in that 24, 25, 26 age bracket.
Yes, indeed. It's definitely a bit of a changing of the guard on Friday. Now, just finishing up on Carlton, Tommy, you broke some details about Greg Williams' role. It's a bit bigger than we first thought.
Yeah, Greg Williams is the football director, i.e. on the board, who's got football responsibility. And most clubs have got a football director. It's usually a voluntary position. You come and go from the club. Obviously, there's quite a bit of work involved. You don't come into the club every day. And you don't usually have an office. And you certainly don't get paid. It's usually voluntary at most clubs. As I mentioned, Greg Williams is the executive director of football at Carlton. He's essentially working full-time at the moment. He's working from an office at the moment at Carlton. And my understanding is he does get paid. It's not a huge, crazy salary or anything like that, but he does get paid. Greg Williams is effectively running the football department. Brad Lloyd didn't lose his job, the football boss. Their release on Friday emphasised that there'd be no more personnel changes. But for all intents and purposes, Greg Williams is the footy boss as well as the football director. And he's serving in an executive function. And one of his first ideas or goals, try and secure Geelong outgoing CEO Brian Cook, because Carlton see that CEO function is really important to the function of the football department. And they think that Brian, or a similarly qualified CEO, will lead the changes that are recommended under their football review.
An exhaustive one today, Tommy. Thanks for calling in, and we'll speak to you again on Wednesday.
Thanks so much, Rudy.